Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is help at home with minor home maintenance. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
And welcome back to Project Independence and You here at WCWP.org. We've been speaking with Jennifer Kona, who is chair of the Board of Trustees at the Long Island Alzheimer's and Dementia Center, LIAD. And before break, I know, Otto, you presented an interesting question.
Yeah, well, I had read not long ago that there's a blood test which is not FDA approved, but it's being used in several places for diagnosing Alzheimer's. And I was just wondering what you might know about that.
So I heard about this and, you know, in my line of work, obviously I gave this some thought. And my thought on this is, let's say you do go get this blood test, and let's say that you now learn that you may or will someday develop Alzheimer's or dementia. What are you going to do with that information? Are you going to comport your life differently? And the true answer, in my opinion, is that most people are not. You know, perhaps you will get your affairs in order. That is a win-win, because we should all get our affairs in order. We should all do our estate planning. We should all have advanced directives and wills, right? So that is a win. But what else would you really do differently? Okay, I don't think most people would quit their job and move someplace else and live day to day and all those, you know, esoteric things that we all think we should do because, you know, life is short and you could get hit by a bus tomorrow. No one's really going to do that. And there is a lot of downside. So if you have done this test and it says that you are or may develop Alzheimer's or dementia in the future, now you can't get life insurance. Now you can't get long-term care insurance. It's going to be in your medical records. You have just, at whatever age you may be, excluded yourself from all of these things that you very well need or will need medically, and it's going to follow you in your medical chart forever to your detriment. So I don't see upside to doing this at all at this time.
Those are all great points. You know,
and people don't think about that.
No, I didn't, to be honest about it.
Yeah, people don't think it through. They hear it. It sounds like, oh, I should do this. I should know. I want to know. But people don't take it to the next step. And so my job is to educate people on that. So we did a piece on this on our podcast because I want people to be aware of the negative consequences and not just jump to, oh, I do want to know, and not sit and think it through. And, you know, that is my job. That is my job, is to help people pause and think and make a more informed and more mindful decision about things like that, because they're complicated. Knee-jerk reactions are not good. These are complicated things.
Well, the whole diagnosis process, I believe, for the early stages thing, is very complicated. I have a friend who found out that they were showing symptoms, and it turns out they were on Ambien for quite a while. And Ambien has one of the side effects of causing memory problems.
Yep.
You know, people may have a medication issue as opposed to an Alzheimer's issue.
Absolutely. Xanax, so a lot of things that people are taking for anxiety or sleep, like you said, medication management, medication contraindications, all of those things are huge. And we see a lot of misdiagnoses, not just in this realm, but with many, many other conditions. And the trouble there is that, unfortunately, we don't have a healthcare system where you have a quarterback. You just have a lot of different doctors and they never speak to each other. And the pharmacy, not everybody goes to the same pharmacy. You may get some medications from here. You may do mail order for others here. Nobody talks to each other, and it can really derail somebody. And the only time it sometimes can get cleared up is if somebody ends up in the hospital. Then everything does get looked at and can start to get cleaned up. But it should never end up that somebody has to have a crisis situation and end up in the hospital before this kind of stuff is looked at. You know, we really need that kind of quarterbacking healthcare system where somebody says, these are all of the things you're on, and you should, and half of this stuff doesn't work with the other half, and that's causing sleep problems, memory problems, depression, anxiety, whatever. And if you if I take you off this or I change this, it will change your life dramatically. But we don't have that right now, and it is terrible for all people, but especially for seniors.
You know, yeah. Just to go further on that point, I agree with you 100%. The next problem is that even if you had a quarterback and you go into a hospital, your quarterback is no longer the one who's in charge.
Of course.
You get assigned a doctor who knows nothing about you.
Absolutely.
Which I don't like at all. You know, yeah. You go to a doctor for 30 years and all of a sudden somebody who met you 2 hours ago is in charge.
Yep.
I don't get that.
But to that point, you need a family member with you at all times, and you need to be your own best advocate, which is easier said than done because you don't know what state you're going to be in a hospital, but you really have to have an advocate with you, you know, whether that's a child, a spouse, whatever. Somebody really has to be in charge of you and asking the questions and not taking things at face value. You know, and I think especially with our seniors, they see the white coat and the stethoscope and they think that word is gospel. And
right.
That's really not Absolutely. Necessarily the case. You have to ask questions. You have to, you know, sometimes push back a little bit, and you've got to really be in there all the time as an advocate. And not just sort of saying, oh, they know everything because they're well-educated and they have the white coat on.
Right.
That's not good enough anymore. Maybe it was back in the day, but it's just not anymore.
Well, you have to help manage your health.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, right. You might as well go to a veterinarian.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't talk like if you were a horse or a dog.
Right, right. Only you know you. You know your body best. You know your mind best. You have to communicate all that stuff. To your point, the doctor who just met you 2 hours ago doesn't know anything about you except what's written down in your chart, which doesn't really say much of anything about you as a person.
Right. If
and
they
I think
read
it's
it.
Important that seniors find doctors that, I mean, there's not a lot of them that are geriatricians that have a practice of a lot of seniors. I mean, if you're continuing to go to the same, not that a family practitioner or internist aren't good with seniors, but, you know, as we get older, I mean, the issues, the frailty, all the problems that come on, you know, just multiply. And like you were saying, you know, you're like juggling and you know, the chances are, the likelihood is every visit to the doctor, once we do get older, there is going to be some even minor change in dosage of one particular medicine. So it's so important to really find the kind of doctor that, you know, that not you're not just comfortable with, but, you know, hears you and, you know, is willing to work with family members and also recommend family members to come with you. So, yeah. You know, that's what we need more geriatricians. I mean, the senior population is exploding. You know, 10,000 people a day are turning 65, mm-hmm. and that's gonna be for another 9 years. 1964 through the whole baby boom generation, there's 10,000 people a day turning 65. So we really need to look at that population that's going to be the majority in just a few years, if it isn't already, and, you know, service them the right way, you know, with geriatric medicine, which, you know, if there's anybody listening that's in medical school, you know, mm-hmm. that's an important field to kind of come into, because, you know, it's going to be a lot of people. I mean, your practices sooner or later, I mean, most practices are going to be, you know, 50% people 65 and over.
Absolutely. I will say that some of the medical schools now are incentivizing students to go into geriatrics. So that is a
right.
good trend. They see the need, they see the gap, and they are working to close that. And I'd also like to mention that LIA does have a great resource guide of the geriatricians, neurologists, and other doctors that work really well with us and are specialists in these fields that we give out to people so that they can use that as a guide, meet with them. It's people that know the specific and special needs of not just seniors, but people with Alzheimer's and dementia. And anyone who calls our center, we'll send it out to them.
All right. That's a very valuable list. We may have
to get that
over here, Christina, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's already vetted people, so you don't have to start from scratch.
Right. And on Long Island. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see anything starting to open up at all as a result of late, you know, like all of a sudden you can go to a wedding and you can go to a restaurant and whatever? Do you see being able to visit people's homes or people coming to the center? Is that loosening up at all?
It should happen pretty soon. We were hoping that March 1 would be a target date, but obviously that came and went. So we're working with Nassau County in constant communication with them. They've been to the center. They know that we're totally COVID compliant. We are waiting for them to authorize all senior centers to reopen. And that would include us as a, community center providing the same, you know, similar type services. So as soon as we get the green light, we would open because we have been, like I said, we're completely COVID compliant. We've done all the deep cleaning. We have the protocols in place. We have new cleaning crews that would do the daily work and the sweeps in between and all that. So we are completely ready. We are just not going to do anything until the county gives us the green light that it is safe. So that's what we're waiting for. And, you know, we've had times when it looked like we could, and then, you know, people started traveling, or then there was Thanksgiving, and then, you know, so it's really been so up and down. And obviously with our population, we can't take any chances as much as we want to. And people are desperate to get back in. And we have a huge waiting list. So we have our participants who were already with us waiting to get back in. And then behind them is a tremendous waiting list for both services in the center and the respite care in the home. Our waiting list is huge.
I'd be curious to know how many new people you've had join since the pandemic. And are you able to even branch out in a larger, you know, radius because of the fact that you're...
We're reaching people all over the island now. Before we had expanded the footprint when we got to Westbury, as I had mentioned before, but now people can come from anywhere, from the city all the way out to the Hamptons because of the virtual services. So like I mentioned, we will absolutely continue that because we can reach so many more people.
Wonderful.
And our buses go all over. We have pickup points at various assisted livings. So we pick up a group of people who want to come in for additional services, and we pick up, people at their homes.
LIAD is not a profit-making business. So therefore you have to get money from somewhere. Donations, I would assume.
Yes.
I looked on your website. I actually bought some raffle tickets, your virtual raffle, yesterday.
That is great, Otto. You know what? Let's talk about that. We have to take a quick break. You'll have 15 more minutes. So we'll be right back with Project Independence and You after this break.